We are back with Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Hike. Noir exposes the underbelly of a place. In film or fiction, characters live in the shadows, denizens of a night where every good intention is punished. Noir found its natural home in New York City and L.A. in the 1940s and 50s, but now Milwaukee can lay claim to its own piece of the genre.
Milwaukee Noir is a collection of 14 short stories edited by our next guest, Tim Hennessy. Two of the writers, Jennifer Morales and Valerie Lakin, joined Tim in the studio as well as he explains how the project began.
About 3 years ago, a friend of mine, Scott Phillips, was editing the St. Louis Noir anthology, and he had been in town and we met for coffee. And we were talking about projects that he was working on, and he had asked what I was working on. And at that time, really nothing was working. And he had said, oh, they're looking to do a Milwaukee one. I could mention you. And I thought, oh, that's amazing. But why would they possibly consider me? I do book reviews, and I do interviews, and I also am a bookseller. And my short fiction wasn't really kind of finding a home. So it seemed like a little bit of an unlikely matching to me. But he did reach out, and they were very interested, but their slate was full at the time. So I did mostly researching for a year, finding different authors I thought would lend themselves well to the project. And I wanted to incorporate a lot of different voices. So I was looking at journalists. I was looking at poets. I was looking at really anyone who could lend a really authentic sense of Milwaukee and what it's like to live here.
And it had to be new work, right?
Yes. All of it had to be first-time published work. And that was part of the challenge.
Okay. And how did you meet these two?
I was big fans of their work. I found both their books while working at Half Price Books. And it was just a matter of, you know, sometimes you're either getting a book in or you're shelving it and you think, oh, wow. And but then seeing a Milwaukee connection, they definitely were people I looked deeper into their work and really fell in love with it. So they were, you know, right away, people I wanted to have involved.
Now, Jennifer, once you heard about it, did you want to do this? Or was there any resistance?
I have a policy to, if I'm physically capable of saying yes, I will say yes. That is my, you know, my message to the universe. If I get a writing invitation, I will try to say yes. I am not a noir writer by nature. I'm a happy ending, can't we all get along kind of person. So the idea of writing a story, and I'm thinking noir is like, you know, Raymond Chandler and the, you know, the gritty private investigator, mysterious dame walks into his office and he's, you know, polishing off a bottle of whiskey, you know.
I just think Humphrey Bogart, you know, when
yeah.
I hear noir, that's what I think.
Yeah. And you know, so I wanted to be open to that, but I had to set some rules for myself about how I would approach this new genre. But I definitely wanted to say yes, so I did. And my two rules were I was going to write queer noir. I was going to bring in some kind of gay or trans theme into it. And the other one was no guns. And I often write about children. And so somebody suggested, well, you could have a water gun fight. You know, that would be fun, little squirt gun thing. So I did work that in. But then the story really demanded a gun. So there is a gun.
But so you broke one of your rules.
I broke one of my rules. But that's part of learning to write a new genre.
And Valerie, had you any experience with noir writing before this?
Not exactly, although my first novel did have a crime element. So, I mean, it wasn't something that was completely alien to me, but I guess I would have thought of myself as more of a sort of literary fiction writer. And I didn't have that much experience even reading noir. So the first thing I did when Tim contacted me was I just went out and bought some of those noirs from other cities, like Boston Noir, New York Noir, that sort of thing. And I thought, well, I could try that, and I thought it would be fun. The good news was that also Tim contacted us in the summer, I think, and I teach during the academic year, and so I'm always more inclined to say yes to things in the summer. I'm like, oh, sure, I have all summer. This will only take a weekend or so. I can write that story in 2 days.
Was that true?
No, I worked on it for like 6 months. I finished it like a day before the deadline in December or January. I can't remember. But there was one little kernel of an idea that I had been kicking around for a short story before Tim contacted me. And so when he contacted me, I thought, well, I could use that kernel for this story. And the kernel was that there's a manhole in the middle of my garage. And I've always wondered what it leads to and why it's there and what's down there. It's always kind of scared me a little bit. Every time I get out of my car, I step on it and it makes that rattly sound. And so my story ended up kind of following what happens down that manhole.
Tim, did you think of noir and Milwaukee together easily?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Why? What is it about Milwaukee and its environs that lends itself to the noir genre so well?
We have such a rich history, and it's always amazed me and fascinated me. And we have the socioeconomical conditions where there's so much conflict. Everywhere there is conflict in the city. I used to be a cable guy, so all day long I was traveling throughout neighborhoods, throughout the city and the suburbs. So I constantly got to be in a lot of places and a lot of homes no one ever had access to. And you'd be inserted into conflicts and situations that a lot of times you're walking into the middle of a family during a crisis and they just happen to be getting cable. And so getting to see a lot of different neighborhoods really opened my eyes to the possibilities of just location. And certainly in my own work, I was always trying to figure out how to insert different aspects of different areas I'd see or different backgrounds and different economic classes. And there was never a lack of opportunity. And we have such a distinct culture here that I think goes ignored too often. And we don't often find anything in the city really or even in the state represented in fiction that much. So that was something I was really excited to do. And certainly, I mean, we've got a lot of history of problems that keep rising up again and again. So that's always something thematic that crime fiction really draws on, is just how you kind of can't escape the past so much. Something bad happened in the past, and it sometimes can have reverberations to the future.
Well, often do. Yeah. You know, the idea that it just plays out into generations. I probably should have started with this question. What does noir mean to the two of you, the two writers? I mean, Tim's kind of described it for himself, but the two writers who are representing all of the rest of the writers in the book, Jennifer, what is noir?
I think it's darkness. I think it's about finding the underside of daily life. You know, I did go back. I did my research. I do my homework. I'm a good student. So, you know, I did go and read some Raymond Chandler. I read Patricia Highsmith. You know, I'm trying to go to the roots of the genre. And it feels to me that any story can be noir if you're looking at the underside of it, the shadow side, the dark side. And I'm really, really interested in complicated characters who are they're not bad people, but they make bad choices or they have bad habits. And noir is great for that. So that's what I was looking for, is how do I show a protagonist who's a good person, who means to do right, but just messes everything up.
I was going to say, the thing I love about noir is that no one is perfect. You know,
right.
There's no perfection here. It's like everyone has something.
Yeah, the baseline assumption is that things are going to go wrong, that people commit crimes, that people are violent, right? In normal, I think in non-noir fiction, the assumption is these are more or less regular people and some bad things will happen to them. I think the assumption in noir is many of these people are bad. If you turn over a leaf, there will be something bad underneath it. Like the assumptions get reversed, right? The bad stuff, the crime, the violence, the darkness is assumed as a baseline. So there may be pockets of goodness buried in there, but I think that it's like the underworld.
Right. It's almost dystopian.
Mm-hmm.
In its outlook on life, there are these sparks of little brightness, but they get extinguished pretty quickly, you know?
And there's like a bigger tolerance for things like melodrama and like sleaziness, sexiness, cynical attitudes that I think kind of make it really fun to engage with both as a reader and as a writer.
Was it fun for the two of you to jump into this as writers?
Yeah, it was great fun, because I now am talking with Tim about possibly doing a workshop at some point called Writing Dark, because it did change how I'm looking at my non-noir fiction. Anytime I learn something new about how to write is very exciting for me.
I was going to say, in a good way? Did it change it in a good way?
Yeah, it really opened me up to like, no, your characters are tough. They can handle a little more sleazy, sexy, whatever Valerie does, and the beautiful alliteration, you know, violence. I can hurt them more.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the resilience ends up showing more dimension, and the conflict just kind of really escalates things too. Because in a lot of noir fiction or just in crime fiction in general, you know, bad things happen and then they get worse. And you can, there's a lot of tone range that you can take that. You can, you know, there's certainly a lot of comic noirs that use and comic crime stuff that really kind of just exaggerate those features. And then certainly the more dramatic ones that really just build on that and just bring the characters into a much worse spot than they started off.
I was going to say, and both of you kind of are in that latter. These stories are both in that latter category. And I'm hoping maybe each of you would read just a little bit. I don't want to give away each story. I want people to come and read them. Jennifer, you said you wanted to include queer and LGBT themes in yours. How did you do that?
Well, I feel like this story has two protagonists. I don't know if that's allowed in fiction. Maybe not. But there is the main character, Marta. She's our point of view character, is a gay Mexican-American woman from the South Side. Her cousin, who is known as Carlisa, joins the military, goes off to Afghanistan with the army, and comes back and announces to the family that she would like to be known as Carlos now, and addressed as he. And so that was the way that I brought in tension that I feel in the Latino community around gay and trans identities.
And it brings a certain extra darkness to the story that you're telling because of these layers,
It does. Yeah. I like that layering of the precariousness of their lives, that it's not just that they're threatened by the outside world, but even within their family, there's a struggle to accept this evolving person.
Is there a paragraph that you would share with us?
I can read a little bit from Marta talking to her mom on the phone and trying to get her mom to use the right pronoun for Carlos. Carlos has disappeared, so Marta is looking for him. I called my mom from the street outside. Have you seen Carlos? She made the humming noise she always did before she lied or held something back. Today? No, mi amor, not since yesterday. Yesterday? When did you see him yesterday? More humming. Well, she went to talk to her mom and... You should say he, mommy. Well, they had a little talk and then I don't know where she went. That's it? You have no idea where he is now? An icy feeling rushed down my spine. My mom could be evasive for a lot of reasons, politeness, shyness with strangers, fear. She did it all the time, but this felt different. You could ask your tía. I'll do that. So throughout the story, Marta's trying to be the ambassador and say, we need to accept Carlos for who he is and how he wants to be addressed. And as the story progresses, the family unfortunately continues to fail to get the message. And Marta misses the message in her own ways, too.
Yes. Yeah, she's, again, we talk about that there's no perfection. She's not a perfect character either.
Right.
Even though she's well-meaning.
Yeah.
So, Valerie, you have a very different setup. It takes place on the East Side, and that manhole cover figures into it.
Yeah, the story is narrated by a high school girl who's been living in the streets with a few friends of hers. So she's sort of homeless, and she's been given an assignment by one of her teachers to write a letter of appeal or complaint to a politician. And so the story itself is a letter to the mayor of Milwaukee. We shouldn't have been there in the first place. That's the problem with telling you anything real. We should have been tucked into soft little beds, dreaming of algebra or homecoming or whatever. We shouldn't have been creeping through the sewers under your city. I know that much. We shouldn't have been hunched up like rodents, sweeping our flashlights along the damp, scratchy walls, trying not to hit our heads while we searched for those metal rungs that lead up to manholes. Don't worry, I'm not talking about your real sewer system, Mr. Mayor, that deep channel of filth that flows down to Jones Island and fills up Lake Michigan. I'm talking about the old spiderweb of pipes that runs closer to the surface, under the East Side. Maybe you don't even know it exists, but we do. Me, Diego, and JJ, we drop down into it at night because some of those manholes don't open onto streets or alleys like you would expect. They open up into the garages of people like you. And people like you store all kinds of pawnable stuff in your garages, so much that you forget you ever even had it. I bet 9 out of 10 people we hit don't even know they've been robbed. So how bad am I really supposed to feel about it?
Terrific. Well, I want to thank all three of you for coming in this morning. This is great. And just thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim Hennessy edited the short story collection Milwaukee Noir. Jennifer Morales and Valerie Lakin are two of the contributors to the collection.
The book launch happens Tuesday, May 7th at Boswell Books with most of the authors in attendance. You can find out more at WUWM.com.